Welcome into What in God's Name. She's Shana Appel.
And he's Chris Owen.
We're doing theological and philosophical reflections on current events and culture. And that means that we want to start in curiosity, go deep, and shed some light.
Amen.
Amen to that. One criticism of climate change science is that scientists claim more certainty in their predictions than they are really entitled to claim. So my question to you, Shana, to get us started is this. Do you trust that scientists predicting dire consequences by 2040 are without a doubt right on and totally 100% correct with their predictions?
Yeah, that's just not in my personality type, Chris. I'm not inclined to believe anything 100% and without a doubt. However, you know, that having been said, looking around at the impact of changes in our environment, recent storms, hurricanes that have decimated the East Coast, and pairing that with what scientists are reflecting on, I think suggests that there is a real good probability that they're right. But beyond all of that, let me ask you this. What do we have to lose by assuming that they are right?
Yeah, exactly. You're anticipating what my response to the question, which is we don't need 100% certainty.
No, we're in this place where, you know, we could be creating more jobs. We could be creating jobs with good income. We could be protecting our shores. We could be there are places around the world, like in Amsterdam, for example, where they have figured out how to construct cities in flood zones in a way which protects them.
Yeah. Shana, I struggle within myself with regards to the catastrophic thinking that some people genuinely feel.
The sky is falling.
Yeah.
Do you think they're Chicken Littles?
Sometimes I do. I have to be honest about that. Sometimes I do. But that's my, you know what it is? I get skeptical of
Absolutism
and in the sense that we know without a doubt what the future will hold, and I'm skeptical of that. And yet, on the other hand, so this is the debate inside myself. On the other hand, the consequences could potentially be dire.
Mm-hmm.
So here's the philosophical point I think to be made, which is in any action that we choose to take, we are never sure completely what will come of it.
Correct.
And that doesn't stop us from acting.
But what I guess in my mind and in the minds of many other people that I've spoken to, the real question here is why wouldn't we begin to move in a direction that takes better care of our environment? Why would we not do that? What do we have to lose by creating the jobs that would be necessary in order for us to turn towards more sustainable energy sources? I mean, I guess that's the part that I don't. What does it cost to get the CAFE standards up on automobiles in America? I don't understand. So the gas companies won't make as much money. The gas companies will be fine if they make a little less money.
Yes, and they don't want to make a little bit less money.
Well, and there is the hair that crosses all things that. You know, where we have this laissez-faire economy and people, it's all about making money.
And there's vested power and vested interest. So
vested power and vested interest. And let's not forget a complete and total lack of any conversation in our nation's leaders about a common good. And a common stock.
Yes.
This planet is a common stock, not only for people of this nation, but for people of the world.
Yes.
And it's time for us to start dealing with that as a value.
Yes. For sure. So circling back a little bit, is it fair to say that to some degree, the debate over whether climate science is accurate or inaccurate is a little bit beside the point? And what is more to the point is that, as you say, why not hedge our bets and act as though climate change were happening, take remedial action. What do we have to lose?
What do we have to lose? And let's not write the science off altogether, because at the end of the day, what we are experiencing here domestically and abroad absolutely substantiates the claims being raised by the science, which is that the environment is changing. Now, we can sit here and argue about how fast it's changing and at what point the changes will be irreversible until the irreversible happens, or, you know, I'm just saying, or we could get busy trying to do something about it now. I don't think we have to always take ourselves to the brink of crisis before we do something.
Yes. So I was going to ask you about this, because another theological point here is, at least from the Judeo-Christian context, we believe God made this creation, and everything God made, at the end of it, God said, this is good. It's good. Like, we don't turn away from the material world.
The order is good. There's an order to it. It's miraculous, actually.
Yeah.
It's
And so we can hold that in common as people of faith with those who don't share in our faith tradition, secular people, humanists, even atheists, who value the earth. Mm-hmm. And they call it, I'm sure they might call it good, but for different reasons.
Mm-hmm.
As we address these issues, we need to build bridges from faith communities to other people of goodwill, mm-hmm, who see the world as good and precious and beautiful and worthy of our care.
And in some way, shape, or form, regardless of how we understand this creation to have come into being, we recognize God's presence in it all, or some divine mystery inherent within it all. And we seek to preserve that. But even if we didn't, you know, there has to be this sense among humanity that this earth is our amniotic sac. Without it, we're going to die. There is no getting birthed from this into, you know, the next universe, as, at least as far as we know. So we have to protect this thing, and we have to work together to do it. We have to be able to do it across faith lines, across economic lines, across cultural and ethnic lines. I mean, this could be the great issue of our time that brings us together, or, you know, we're going to fall back into these inane arguments about, you know, how right is the science? Well, let's say the science is 50% correct. It still parallels what we're seeing around us, and we would like to have less category. I'm assuming most people would prefer to see fewer Category 5 hurricanes, you know, eating communities, literally swiping communities right off our nation's coast.
Yeah. I'm going to give you, Shana, my less hopeful take on the issue of climate change.
Oh, good.
Which is that I tend to have this stance towards the world and towards human beings that we don't change until there's a catastrophe or a disaster, or until we feel it in our bellies. Like, for example, if climate change suddenly disrupted the food chain, the food supply, and the market shelves were bare,
well,
that would get people's attention. But I'm not sure that humans will, of their own good nature, seek change.
And that we will do at our peril, because the reality is food chains are being disrupted around the world. Availability of clean drinking water has been disrupted in areas around the world. And if we need to wait until it hits here harder than it already has, we've seen what happens. We have these huge hurricanes. They slam the Gulf Coast, and gas prices, you know, shoot through the ceiling. So, I mean, I hear you. I don't disagree with you. I think human beings tend to wait until the pressure is on to change. I don't know. Do you think we really need a whole lot more pressure than what we have?
Apparently.
Well, the only reason I ask that is because, you know, for example, while the president has pulled out of the Paris Climate Accord, we are seeing communities, we're seeing states, we're seeing more
action. Thank
God for
California.
Yeah, thank God for California. Thank God for, you know, some of the things that they're doing down right here in Boston, where you're seeing cities and towns starting to move in that direction. Texas is doing a phenomenal amount with wind technology right now. So, You know, leadership abhors a vacuum. And if there is a vacuum, someone will step in and lead. And in this case, it happens to be happening more at the grassroots and local level.
Thank you for saying that. That helps me feel more optimistic. And I think ideas are so important. I think it's just crucial to continue the conversation, to keep it going, to make the arguments, and to reflect and think about these questions.
Well, and also to step back periodically and to look at, you know, to do that work of discernment where we, you know, we stop long enough, we pause long enough on the forming edge of our lives to kind of take stock of what's going on. And I think when you look at what's going on with respect to the environment, what is going on for women, what is going on economically, with respect to how wide the spread is between the haves and the have-nots, when you start to look at all of those things and you analyze them for root cause, you keep coming down to some of the same players keep showing up. And interestingly enough, some of them may be familiar to those familiar with the seven deadly sins. You know, things like greed, avarice, sloth. So these are the ills of humanity that have been around, you know, since recorded history anyway. And they didn't serve us well then, and they're not serving us well now. But they also lift up an intersectionality of oppressions that I think has to be looked at. You can't look at the environment apart from that. You can't look at environmental degradation apart from the fact that some people believe that they have some preordained right to make millions and millions of dollars regardless of what it does to whomever.
So when you say that, I think of the Koch brothers. They've concentrated a lot of their wealth towards stifling legislation on climate change.
Absolutely. You know, any of these industries where people make money, it's easy to sow fear among the people who will be impacted and divide those who want to go down one path from those who want to go down another, never telling either party that a middle way is possible. And I think that's what we're largely missing in so many areas right now, certainly in the public debate in this country has become painfully bifurcated.
Yes. One of the key struggle, I guess I'm going to use the language of struggle, contention, politically. So political philosophy is libertarianism versus something a little more communitarian. And we've alluded to this earlier in this conversation. I mean, the Koch brothers are renowned libertarians. The idea that individual liberty is the trump card for how we should be in the world and how we should order our political affairs. Individual liberty, get the government out of everything. And to a degree, liberty's good. Like, it's not like that liberty is bad. But if you raise it to the summum bonum, the best good that there ever can be, I think libertarianism is wanting as the top dog of political philosophy, as the top dog of how to be in the world. And so there's this, our pendulum has swung really far towards libertarianism in our country. And this plays out certainly in debates about climate change. It needs to come back. We have to have a better sense of the whole and community and connection, including connection to creation. Where does the power and the scale of government, federal government, where is that necessary? Where is it helpful? And then where is it ineffective, inefficient, not helpful?
Right.
Questions of discernment. Questions about the environment and climate change. I mean, you need the government's involvement. The scale is too large.
Absolutely. And you have industries that are, you know, they're national industries. Transportation industry, for example, who's going to regulate that? So even if all the states are doing what they can to decrease our carbon footprints, if there's no regulation on, say, the trucking industry, which would have to be done federally. Otherwise, you're going to have trucks, what, pulling up to the state line, offloading and reloading onto a truck that, you know, has a license to operate in New Hampshire? I mean, how's that going to work? So that having been said, I'm not opposed to getting the federal government out of all sorts of other matters, like, for example, who the church can and cannot marry. But there you have it.
There you have it.
Amen.
Be curious, Shana.
Shine the light, Chris.
Go deep.
Amen. Amen. Thanks, everyone. Tune in again for our next episode of What in God's Name, a news and culture podcast, creating a platform for liberal religious voices in the 21st century.
We look forward to hearing from you on our Facebook page, What in God's Name. Just enter What in God's Name in your search bar on your Facebook. And also, we look forward to hearing you through our website, whatingods.com. That's whatingods.com.